Pentagon spokesman Captain Jeff Davis claimed on Monday that the fatalities occurred when the drone carried out the strike on a training camp of al-Shabaab militants about 195 kilometers north of the Somali capital of Mogadishu. The militants were there training and were training for a large-scale attack. We know they were going to be departing the camp and they posed an imminent threat to the United States and African Union forces, said Davis. Declining to give further details, Davis noted that the training camp had been under surveillance for some time prior to the drone attacks. Somalia is the sixth country where the United States has used assassination drones to launch missile strikes. The U.S. military has also used drones in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Libya, Iraq, and Yemen. The White House will, for the first time, release the death toll from U.S. drone strikes conducted since 2009, officials say. The figures will be disclosed in a review of the U.S. airstrikes worldwide outside of active war zones, according to Lisa Monaco, President Barack Obama's top homeland security advisor. The review will include the number of both fighters and civilians who were killed in the air raids. In the coming weeks, the administration will publicly release an assessment of combatant and non-combatant casualties resulting from strikes taken outside areas of active hostilities since 2009, Monaco said during a speech at the Washington think tank. The report, set to be released following a 2013 promise by Obama to provide more transparency.
And hello. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web. ANG-newswire.blogspot.com.
This is an interesting time. And just so you can know that there's no lock on crazy. I happen to know for a fact that Angry is listening right now, and he'll go, oh yeah, I tried to tell people. Nation of Islam had their Savior's Day sermon in Chicago, and that's where Louis Farrakhan stood up and said, Trump is the only member who has stood in front of the Jewish community and said, I don't want your money. Anytime a man can say to those who control the politics of America, I don't want your money, that means you can't control me. And they cannot afford to give up control of the presidents of the United States. Not that I'm for Mr. Trump, but I like what I'm looking at, he said. You can bet your ass that Donald Trump won't have any problem at all. There will be no hesitation in disavowing Louis Farrakhan, because Louis Farrakhan scares the pee-pee out of white people. Mm-hmm. Hey, wait a minute. I think I've had a prayer answered. Oh, shit. I may have to turn on...
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land! Indian land! Indian land! Indian land! Indian land!
You guys have no jurisdiction here.
Indian land! You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know.
Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligence Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for the smart of the original.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigenous.
Christopher, inside the Times, well, this is on the front page of the Times, and it's the breaking news from America overnight. Trump and Hillary Clinton are getting
head-to-head
victories. Trump takes Florida.
I know. I mean, it is amazing. And when you see some of the scenes that are going on over there, it's just extraordinary. I mean, it is quite frightening, I think. I mean, it looks as though we could have Trump as the president. And as Prime Minister, it's a very bad hair day for politics. Because I'm not quite sure how we're going to cope. I mean, it is... Hillary's doing well, so, you know, but I mean, it is quite phenomenal how you... When you see some of the pictures of Trump taking these... And a lot of them have been cancelled because, of course, there's a lot of danger arising now from his supporters. It is terrifying. I think it's that Middle West gun shooting people who are finding him exciting.
It's quite a large swathe of the U.S. electorate, though. Midwest gun toter.
Oh, absolutely. It's huge.
It's not so terrifying that he's there. It's that this is what America seems to want.
Yes, that is a terrifying thing.
And it's his word, but it seems to be right that he is unstoppable.
Do you find it a frightening prospect in terms of a lot of people in Britain will go, well, what does it matter to us, you know, if Donald Trump becomes president?
It's communication with our world, with Europe, or Britain and the rest of Europe is going to be everything. It's key. Of course it is. Is Trump going to be able to have a relationship with Putin? How is this going to work?
It would certainly be a fiery relationship.
Well, you're shooting.
That would be an interesting twist in the tale of politics, wouldn't it?
Big news day.
Yeah, it would be a huge news day. Alice.
Internet radio for smarter than
This is APNS Public Radio.
The opinions expressed in dispatches represent the analysis of the participating editors and may not necessarily reflect the group positions of the ANG or its public news wires.
Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid from The Horn. Head on RadioNetwork.com and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
And from here to $610 to, you know, us going off the air is not a very long trip at all.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Ray in Florida pointing out, this being Moran Monday, Kentucky just made it legal for anyone to refuse to perform a mixed race marriage. You know, because of religious sensibilities. Hey, look, it's the angry Indian. What's happening, angry?
Hey, my man.
What do you know?
Well, we all know what the fuck is going on. You know, we're going through a fascist period. It kind of has to happen. It happens in a lot of different societies. I make the argument that the Mayans actually went through a period like this. The Aztecs went through a period like this. You know, you have upward mobility in terms of the cash flow in any given nation going to the upper anywhere from 15 to 1%, as we have in the United States, United Kingdom, Australia, and New Zealand. you know, they have to blame somebody. So you start blaming the folks who are not part of your tribe. You start blaming these people over here. You know, I just went through this with some friends a couple of nights ago about the Wyss trials. You know, everybody who was accused was somebody who was, you know, initially an outsider in the village of Salem. Then it got to people who had, you know, families who had quarrels with one another.
Yeah, it began spiraling inward.
It got spiraled. Yeah, you know, I mean, it was the daughters. It was two daughters of the newly elected, or actually he kind of appointed himself, minister of the community. He was a failed businessman, and he stood to gain from these people losing their land. He was actually trying to bully the town of Salem, village of Salem, to pay him a salary because they kind of refused to. So he needed to get something going to make himself relevant. And all of a sudden his daughters say, oh, by the way, we put an egg in a glass of water and our black slave, Tituba, is telling us that the devil is a black man from Boston and he has the skin of a pine cone. And, you know, that's why that cow over there died. And then he went through their fits and everything else. It's happened before. But, you know, we're looking at this, and yeah, there's a lot of Hitler comparisons, and they're fair. But I've said this many times. The reason we keep talking about Hitler is because of what happened in Germany. The idea that Germans, being the most enlightened, most educated Europeans, the French will argue, but, you know, this is the attitude, how they could go so wrong. You know, no one can understand this, how Austrians could go so wrong. They were just so elevated and more intellectual than the rest of Europe. How could they do this? But we ignore...
Yeah, but goddamn, the racism had been there all along. It never went away.
Yeah, but they were just very sophisticated in how they dealt with it, right? By ignoring it and pretending, you know, victim and victimized and pretending that it really wasn't going on. So, you know, if you were Jewish, you could look at the Turks who were being fucked over. You could look at the half-Sudanese that were left by the French colonial forces and their families and children. You could see them being fucked over and say, well, hey, you know, like Jews do today. Well, you know, that's happened to a Palestinian, a black person, Native American, and a Latino. It's not my group, so I don't give a fuck. But when it happens to us, well, we bring up the Holocaust and everything else. And I'm Jewish, and I can say this. We bring it all up as a qualifier and as a justifier for what the fuck is happening in the state of Israel politically. But, you know, if something happens here in the Jewish community, expect every Jew to close ranks. I'm not knocking the Jewish community for this. But when it comes to black people, well, you're supposed to cry for everybody else, but not cry for yourself. If you're Native, well, hey, you know, it makes sense to be upset about what's happening in Iraq and Afghanistan in terms of colonialism.
By the way, I gotta interrupt for a minute just with a thought that dawned on me. During the town hall last night, the question was put forward about, you know, what do we do about all the police killings of innocent people? And Bernie gave a respectable answer. But just because of the way my mind works, and of course, nobody who ever is a mainstream political candidate and actually wants to be president could ever say this, I guess. But, you know, I was thinking, wouldn't it be nice if he would say something like, you know, back in our first debate, when I mentioned the way things are done in Scandinavian countries, my opponent quickly pointed out that we are not Denmark. Well, the fact of the matter is, if you want better policing, learn better policing strategies. And the fact of the matter is, Scandinavian, Swedish police, Norwegian police, Danish police, German police are better at this than we are. Maybe if we started using our policing monies, our police training monies, to learn from those police forces instead of sending people to study policing from the Israelis, maybe we'd start to make a difference.
That's a good point. But I do have to point...
We're studying the wrong people. I mean, it's like, if we want better schools, don't study the Afghan model, study the Finnish model.
Well, the Afghan model was set by the British, and you can.
But you get my larger point.
Yeah, I get your point. But one other thing that needs to be pointed out about that, though, if you're a Turk in Germany, you're not being treated very well. If you're an African in Germany, you're not being treated very well. You know, if you're a white gay German citizen, and you know you're West Bavarian or whatever, and the officer you're dealing with is West Bavarian, you know, he'll do what he needs to, he or she needs to do, but they're not going to treat you the way, say, a Turk who was on his or her way to school was just stopped for absolutely no goddamn reason. And now is being surrounded by seven, you know, officers and shit. And where's your ID? Who do you know? And this family has been in France. They might be Turk, but they've been in France for three generations.
But the larger issue is that they generally get it. They do a better job of it than we do.
Well, yeah, in the
broad sense, because what? Maybe there are seven cops shootings by cops in Germany a year.
Yeah, but what's
our friends in Australia who convene who go into a national spasm every time a police officer discharges his weapon because it's so rare. Well, I mean, there's policing and there's policing.
Yeah, but at the same time, what sort of society are you dealing with? When you look at the policing that goes down, because I've looked at this. When you look at the policing that goes down in South Africa, I'm talking about today, not under apartheid. There's very little difference. They treat the people in the townships exactly the same way as was done under apartheid. The exact same abuses. And it's still done by black cops, primarily, under white officers. Nothing has really changed under the ANC. But one of the other things that needs to be pointed out, though, is that the economic system is damn near in those townships exactly the same. And when you're looking at Germany and when you're looking at the United States, Germany has a really bad reputation for bureaucracy. It does. It takes like five forms just to get a meeting with somebody. But
that's because they're Germans.
Well, yeah, I mean, we can say that and people will get pissed. But, you know, that being said,
I mean, no, I'm not saying that as an insult. I mean, they're just it's going all the way back to, you know, Bismarck. That government is best which governs most meticulously.
Well, meticulously in terms of having standards. You know, what I have to say about Germany, they maintain standards. They maintain standards for beer, tobacco, food quality. They maintain standards for everything, and they shouldn't be knocked for that. But at the same time, their standards will dip when it comes to dealing with people of color. There was a particular case of a black man named John Otomo, who was homeless. His family had fought for the Germans in Africa. He came over, was working for several years at the Saab factory there. But what ended up happening was he lost his job when he had a general loss of employment at one point during the 80s. It was brief, but it did happen. The police treated him horribly. They ended up killing him. And, you know, there's always been questions about that particular case because he never had a history of having a problem with white people. He never had a history of hating Germany. He actually wrote a letter personally a few years before all of that had happened to the German government saying that my family served you honorably. We love Germany. We speak German. We don't really even identify with other Africans. So, you know, the way that you're treating us as a people is kind of fucked up. You know, we pretty much have sworn our allegiance to you. Why are you doing this? So, you know, there was all kinds of twists and so on about how this is done. And I'm not trying to badjack it, the European policing system. But what I'm trying to say is, as you mentioned earlier with Hitler, or the German society under Hitler, the underlying racism was always there. It was always there. Hannah Arendt had talked about this. It was always there. She was with what? Heidegger. I mean, she knew about this. It was always there. But the differences in terms of how their employment system works, how they pretty much want you to have a goddamn job there. They will force you to fucking work, you know, because they don't want you on the dole if they don't have to have you on the dole. It's a strain on the system. You know, they don't want that. Here, we will let people be homeless. We will let people go without health care. We will let people go on without an income. And as soon as they do anything untoward, meaning try to do something that goes to their survival, and I mean something as minimal as trying to wash up in the public, you know, bathroom, which, of course, none of us like to have to deal with that. But what else are these people supposed to do? You can go to jail for being homeless in more than 20 states in this country. It is a crime.
And we will let our infrastructure hang fire. I don't know if you saw this or not. But the Amtrak Southwest chief, train number 4, rolling from Los Angeles to Chicago, a little bit after midnight today, derailed about 125 miles west of Wichita, Kansas.
And they will blame the engineer.
There were 131 passengers aboard, 14 crew, 32 people were injured. And the early indication, it was a matter of a misalignment in otherwise railroad straight track. Mm-hmm. Now, since we're using Germany as the standard, imagine the Germans letting that happen.
But it's also something. No, they won't let that happen. You know, they won't let that happen. Italy wouldn't let that happen.
The Spain, French.
No, they would. Now, Eastern Europe is a different story.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. But the countries that we successfully rebuilt after the Second World War take this shit serious.
Well, there's a lot of reasons for that.
But there's a lot of reasons that we don't. You know, we don't get the minute that Amtrak was created, the entire Republican machinery started pulling together to try to destroy it. You know, the free market didn't want to do passenger rail anymore. But we made a determination that passenger rail was still viable. And you know what? Amtrak, it's not like Amtrak's just running empty cars. They're usually sold out all over the country.
Yeah, but they run out of loss, though, and they've been running out of loss for more than two decades.
Yeah, and that's because they are not adequately supported.
Well, they're purposely not being supported. You know, it's the same thing with the GPO, the General Post Office. Here, oh yeah, well, we can't need the post. You need to privatize it all because, you know, the government can't do it. Oh my God, the government can't do it. You really believe that? Didn't you listen to Reagan when he was alive? I mean, Nancy Reagan has goddamn passed away. Fuck, you're not paying attention, man. Goddamn, ref. You know, it's like, come on, man. I'm tired of that bullshit because it isn't fucking true. They're being purposely underfunded. And the same thing with rail. Rail built the fucking United States. You know, I mean, we can get into a whole argument about the Chinese and Filipinos and black men that built that mother and poor white people that built that fucking rail. But see, we're not going to discuss that. You know, we're just going to let it all fuck
and, up. And for once, they're not trying to hammer the engineer. The NTSB Safety Board member Earl Wiener said the engineer, apparently from what we understand, was quite vigilant, noticed that there was something wrong with the tracks, put the train into emergency braking early in that process, and that was probably responsible for the train derailment not being any worse than it was.
Probably, because he had the experience. So, you know, I'm going to assume. Yeah.
Now, hold on a minute, though. And I'm not trying to make this all about the derailment, but I find this a teachable moment, and I find it emblematic, Angry. Whose track was that? Hint, that was not Amtrak's track, I'll betcha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because Amtrak tends to run on freight rails. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a passenger train running on freight rails is kind of like the same kind of accommodations you get if you sign on to a tramp steamer thinking that you're getting on Royal Caribbean cruise lines. All right.
The sailors are laughing all over the goddamn world.
I mean, you know, we rode from Thurmond, West Virginia to Chicago, Illinois, Boss Man Wayne and I did. And I thought we were going to derail four or five times. I mean, it was so bad that we would hit something and the sleeper car would bottom all the way down to the bottom of its springs. The little bunk bed tile had to use the Lee cloths, otherwise it'd just throw you into the floor. And that's, you know, that's another part of it. Track maintenance. And that's the free market.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
You know, nobody gives a shit if the coal is comfortable on the way to the port, but human beings are a different thing. So,
Well, I don't know. Well, since we only got about 10 minutes, there's one thing I wanted to bring up.
Absolutely.
A couple of people have been asking me, well, you know, why do you think so many black folks supported Clinton and stuff and didn't go with Sanders? And I'm like, well, the usual thing. They don't know anything about socialism. They're totally freaked out when they hear about it because they, and I'm going to say it, because a white guy told them it's bad. They don't know anything. They don't know enough about it to know what it is. And they, well, he hasn't done anything since the civil rights period. That's not really true. You know, I don't know how much, you know, I said on my show, is the man supposed to bleed every goddamn week all of a sudden? Hillary hasn't bled for you at all. I mean, you mentioned it. And I just saw the film clip yesterday. He was beaten by the fucking police, dragged, chained on the fucking ground with a black woman to a fucking truck. Is there a photograph of Hillary having gone through that bullshit anywhere?
Oh, hell no.
She's taking pictures with George W. Bush because I just saw it. Fucking Trump hugging them, sharing cocktails and bullshit with them. Bernie Sanders is a fucking socialist. So what? His socks don't goddamn match. So what if his fucking hair is wild? If you know anything about the history of socialism in the goddamn United States, you would know. The man is a 100% Northeast fucking socialist. So because he's had to, you know, let's just say, kiss ass a few fucking times so he could, you know, basically, you know, keep his position, Vermont kept sending him the fuck back. Why? So here we have an article I'm reading in the Hinterland Gazette. And I really don't know how much traction this got. But the mothers of but I know there are people who are supporting this. The mothers of Trayvon Martin, Jordan Davis, slammed Bernie Sanders over ghetto comments.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that got all kinds of traction. Well, clearly he used the term ghetto. He doesn't understand that only black people, not only black people live in ghetto. You know, this to a, you know, this to a Jewish guy whose family probably lived in a ghetto.
Well, a real Jewish ghetto, yeah. I think he's from Brooklyn, New York.
Poland.
Or in Poland. Yeah, well, see, the thing about it is he's getting a lot of heat from Jews, too, because he's not running around yelling that he's Jewish, and he's not a fucking Zionist. So, you know, you got the reformers to like, well, at least say that you're Jewish. And he's like, for what? I'm an American. And the others are like, well, hey, you better support us on this shit. And he's like, we need to go and sit at the table.
Well, yeah, but God almighty angry. Why does that standard not apply to Cruz and Rubio? Cruz is a goddamn evangelical fundamentalist homosexual. He's not a Roman Catholic like he's supposed to be. Yeah. And Rubio, that little prick was a Mormon.
Yeah, but what I want to get here and talk to you about with this, so people can understand that there's a dichotomy that's going on that a lot of folks outside the black community are not aware, and people within the black community don't want to talk about, and I'm probably going to fucking get people angry at me about this shit, but this is the reality. I'm not dissing any of these mothers, you know, and I shouldn't even have to say that, but the point is, they're not the only fucking people that have lost children out here. They're not the only people that have been fucked up. You just talked about somebody who did how many fucking years in the joint?
39.
And was innocent? All right? They keep letting these fucking guys out because there's good people out here, a lot of them white, and a lot of them Jewish, I should say, because, you know, they have a sense of fucking duty because of their historical background, who go out of their way, like Barry Schwartz or Shrek, whatever his name was, who dealt with the a few cases. People connect him to OJ. He dealt with a few cases of the Innocence Project where they're getting people out on DNA evidence, as well as
they're
other
not getting people out, saving innocent lives.
Fucking lives. Now, I'm going to say this, and people need to understand where I'm coming from. The reason that Hillary won the way she did in the South is a lot of those people, even if they don't have more than $5 in their fucking pocket, are homeowners, or they live in the house that they rent one. People who will live, like, who grew up the way I did in fucking public housing in a city where you're fucking on top of one another, two families sharing a fucking one-bedroom goddamn apartment for several fucking years, and everybody's working. You know, I'm talking about real shit. People can't pay their fucking, you know, the rent, but they're working, and they're busting their goddamn ass. I don't know anything about the Fulton family, but there was never a question about when Trayvon Martin got killed, he was in the father's girlfriend's community. The girlfriend's community is a majority white, racist, gated community. We've never seen this girlfriend. She never fucking spoke up about this, right? So he, the
wait,
father...
I thought Trayvon was visiting his stepdad.
Well, I thought that he was supposedly with the you're telling me it's the stepdad? Is that the case?
Or is his dad estranged from him? You know, His mom and dad weren't together.
They're not together. Supposedly, his girlfriend lived in that area, and he was with his dad visiting the girlfriend. That's the way I understand it. And she's never come out and said anything. And I'm not assuming that the woman is Caucasian, but the fact that she never came out and said anything has always been a problem for me. Now, a gated community, you don't usually, and I'm saying this because of my own personal fucking experience. When you're a black man, you don't usually get the fuck with people who live in gated goddamn communities. Not usually. Usually you only fuck with people who live in gated communities when you yourself can carry yourself in that motherfucking environment. Do you understand where I'm coming from?
What I'm
saying is that you can look at Trayvon Martin and tell you he came from family. He had home training. He did not grow up in the fucking ghetto. He was not a street kid. So when that son of a bitch Zimmerman took and murked him, it was simply because he was black. You could not look at that boy and say, thug. That was just some bullshit. So what I'm trying to point out is the black people that are supporting Hillary Clinton are the homeowners. They're the people who have jobs, who are just like, if you got to round up these nasty, badass niggas, then take them off the fucking street. Because the majority of black people that do heavy time are being dinged by majority black juries. They're folks like myself who are like, you know what? I work 40 hours a motherfucking week. How dare you even think about fucking robbing me? Get a goddamn job. Now, you know, there are times that I've had that attitude because I'm like, you know what? I guess I'm supposed to think like this because this is where I'm moving. And then I realized, you know, I'm being a dick. And I changed my motherfucking shit and I went back to where the fuck I was when I didn't have any goddamn money and said, you know what? When I didn't have shit, people were saying the same fucking thing about me. You're just a lazy motherfucking nigga. Get a goddamn job when there were no jobs to fucking be got. And then when I got jobs cleaning fucking toilets, I was insulted for cleaning fucking toilets. Right? So here it is. We got the fucking class war within the black community being laid out with this goddamn campaign. Poor people who are black, who understand what the fuck is going on, mostly because of Killer Mike, are supporting Bernie Sanders. They're looking at his record and they're noticing that super predators and shit coming from Hillary is something that only an upper-class, snotty black person would accept and say, well, we need to forget about that and forget about the mass incarceration and forget about the racial profiling that the new crime bill under Bill Clinton made legal again. We're going to ignore that because we don't want to lose our fucking houses. I don't want to lose my motherfucking job. I don't want to lose my dance classes and shit for my daughters. I'm not giving up what the fuck I have. I work hard for it, and I'm watching Empire, goddammit, and I want to live the dream. So I'm voting for fucking Hillary Clinton. I don't give a fuck about what she's going to do to you poor-ass motherfuckers because I'm on another fucking level, and that's what the fuck is going on.
Oh, wait. Okay, I get it. You mean Igamfoo. I got mine.
Yeah.
You.
Yeah.
Okay, so a little bit of clarification. Isaac says she's black. She did an interview on CNN, Trayvon's dad's girlfriend.
Oh, okay. But, you know, I mean, that's cool. I'm not saying that. And see, this is y'all, they make. We live in places like that, too. Well, whoop the motherfucking do for you. I know a whole lot of goddamn people that have had to live for more than a year in their fucking car. And people like you saying, that bitch needs to get a fucking job. Well, why don't you go and help that bitch by fucking taking her to your fucking job and saying, look, I want to get this woman off the goddamn street. Find any goddamn thing in here for her. Any fucking thing. I'm saying this from personal fucking experience. I grew up with Jewish people. They will fucking go to every goddamn buddy they know. They're hiring over here. Go over there and fucking, and, you know, get signed up. The Latino community. Hey. They're hiring over here, man. Go get these fucking jobs. They're letting people in school over here. Go over there and sign the fuck up. Every ethnic group in this country does this shit, except the black fucking community, because we've been taught to hate each other. And Hillary Clinton knows this, and she's like, I can call you motherfuckers whatever I want and say whatever I want and get the fuck away with it.
And as a sort of a denouement, as we wind up here, let's remember, the mamas did that. But by the same token, Eric Garner's daughter said, I'm behind Bernie with everything I got.
Yeah, because they're talking about his NRA record. Well, look, people in Vermont are not running around shooting each other. He's supposed to represent his fucking constituents. And yeah, I'm sorry that he voted for that fucking crime thing. And yeah, he voted to bring Assata back and shit like that. But let's talk about the context of those fucking things and really direct it towards him and ask him.
And you know what? I think, asking him is fine, but it being used as a sort of j'accuse moment by Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton, that's bullshit. because it's only because she's got so many exposures of her own. You know what I mean?
What was the trial in France? A particular Jewish lieutenant, the Dreyfus affair, right?
Yeah, Dreyfus. Yeah, exactly. Dreyfus.
You know, they set the climate against him and took advantage of the fact that, well, he was a Jew. It didn't seem to matter before that, but we need to hit somebody, so fucking put it on him. The crowd will go along with this shit. This is how Zionism got birth.
Meanwhile, I think we all owe it to ourselves to have a broader conversation about the Friday protest. And I mentioned it a little bit, wondering about exactly who was who there. I've seen some serious rat fucking going on. I guess out in New Mexico at their Democratic convention, there were buttons being passed out. The Hillary people claimed that sort of mocked the Hillary logo, and it just said "fuck," and then had the H with the red arrow pointing right, ER. You know, fuck her.
Yeah.
That wasn't Bernie's people. That's classic Nixonian Republican rat fucking.
Well, I just said
plain and simple.
Yeah, I just sent you a link, and I know we got to go, but the a KKK leader who just got his ass kicked fucking last week over in California, he's the number one Klansman out there, the Grand Dragon, says he's throwing his shit behind Hillary Clinton because he believes that she has a hidden agenda, an anti-black, anti-immigrant hidden agenda. And he says that he's supporting her. So you got the Klan supporting Trump, and you got the Klan now in California at least supporting Hillary Clinton. What is the person of color supposed to fucking do?
Ain't enough liquor, Angry. Enough liquor.
Well, for those of us who drink and, for those of us who smoke, regular weed, I suppose, wouldn't work. Hashish would have to be the order to fuck.
No, you just take the whole dried up plant and light it with an acetylene torch. Jesus God. Right. Angry, have a good night, my friend.
If you could support the Bob Kincaid Show, please, please do it. Peace.
Thank you, Angry. And thanks for the help that has come in of late. Thank you very kindly to Haley in Arkansas, and thank you to Kelly. That takes us down 340 to go. So tomorrow's fundraising goal will be 540 minus any changes that happen overnight. Thanks everybody. It's great to be back. Got to get out of here. Hey, Malloy's already gone. Be well, y'all, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.
Do yourself a favor. Get a mind transplant. Listen to independent radio, the alternative media in general. This is Ward Churchill saying have a nice day.
Listening to Angry Indian Radio.
the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Missy Elliott for the Black AIDS Institute.
HIV happens to us more than it does anybody else, which is why we should all get tested, because if we don't step up, then nobody will.
Get informed, get tested, get treated, and get involved. For more information, call the Black AIDS Institute at 213-353-3610. That's 213-353-3610. Or online at www.blackaids.org.
I'm your host, Mike Cadell, broadcasting from North Jefferson County, Kansas, smack dab between Kansas City, Topeka, Lawrence, Atchison. Easiest way to describe it. Put together quite a good show. Think you're going to like it.
Radio Free Kansas on blogtalkradio.com/HideInCopFire.
I would like anyone who is listening to consider some thoughts that I paraphrase from the words of German pastor Martin Niemöller. You might not care if Donald Trump says Muslims must register with their government because you're not one. And you might not care if Donald Trump says he's going to round up all the Hispanic immigrants because you're not one. And you might not care if Donald Trump says it's okay to rough up black protesters because you're not one. And you might not care if Donald Trump wants to suppress journalists because you're not one. But think about this. If he keeps going and he actually becomes president, he might just get around to you. And you better hope that there's someone left to help you.
Hello. This is a message to the so-called New Black Panther Party, which resides in the United States of America. As an American citizen, I ask that you all immediately disband and stop what you are doing, which is misrepresenting an organization and a culture that you do not understand. As the child of a Black Panther, I was raised to understand that the ideals of a Black Panther shall live on. However, the physical representation of a Black Panther can and will be oftentimes misrepresented and imitated. These gentlemen are Black Panthers, and they also have the original mindset of a Black Panther, which is to ensure truth, justice, and equality for every single tax-paying American citizen, regardless of the color of their skin or their ethnicity. God bless you and power you.
Scheme of dirty jobs, and who's gonna build your wall? Who's gonna
Muslims, we got fundamentalist Jews, we got fundamentalist Christians. They'll blow the whole thing up for you. But as I travel around this big old world, there's one thing that I most fear. It's a white man in a golf shirt with a cell phone in his ear. Yeah, who's gonna build your wall, boy? Who's gonna mow your lawn? Who's gonna cook your Mexican food when your Mexican maid is gone? Who's gonna wax the floors tonight down at the local mall? Who's gonna wash your baby's face? Who's gonna build your
Hey music lovers, this is Finian McKay and you're listening to a Creative Commons licensed podcast. Rock and roll forever.
You can't bring up, one guy sent me a very interesting thing about Barack Obama and race. You can't bring up anything other than that suddenly he's African American. If you start to, you know, delve around the edges of, wait a minute, isn't he mixed race? Weren't we told that last year? Whatever, biracial? Not allowed to say that anymore. Apparently, the mainstream media has dubbed him to be African-American.
Yeah, I was driving in today, and I was seeing, because I saw this piece with him on 60 Minutes, and I thought to myself, he's very white in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, gee, can I even say that? Can I even say that without somebody else starting a campaign saying, what does he mean he's very white? He is. He's very white.
When a Muslim without a birth certificate has taken over the White House, you need a good white former junkie to show you the direction that America needs to go in. Beck. It's What's for Demagogue.
This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Head on RadioNetwork.com, an internet-based conversation radio experiment. Available most easily at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a Listen Live button. Just jump right on it, and there you are. Or if you're on a mobile device, it's also easy to find us at TuneIn Radio. A nice app for your mobile smartphone, or Tuner Internet Radio, or Dar.fm, or Stitcher Radio, Streama.com. We are rather ubiquitous. I mean, if we got more every night, we'd be paying salaries, right? Head on RadioNetwork.com.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on Earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right.
What's up, world, and welcome back to another edition of I Mix What I Like here at the Real News Network. I'm Jared Ball in Baltimore. As new generations of activists enter political struggle here in the United States, they enter into a vacuum created by this country's most aggressive repression of revolutionary movements. Assassinations, exile, and long-term political imprisonment have left many of the most seasoned and politically educated revolutionaries incapable of having the requisite influence on successive generations of activists, an influence vital to the success of such movements. Our guest in this segment of I Mix What I Like has recently written a number of provocative public commentaries calling to task several prominent and aspiring black leaders and organizations who are beneficiaries of and replicants of what he has called stealth history. Daruba bin Wahad is a former political prisoner and member of both the Black Panther Party and Black Liberation Army, and is one of our strongest political analysts still willing to perform that function. We welcome him to the show. Welcome, Daruba, to I Mix What I Like here at The Real News.
Thank you for having me on, Jared.
So as I sort of said at the beginning, you have written these commentaries in response to what I'm describing as a vacuum of leadership created by COINTELPRO, or the counterintelligence program, and the repression of the, in this case, black liberation struggle in the United States. You've been critical of the Nation of Islam's Million Man March, the 20th anniversary coming up here in a few months. You've been critical of the new Black Panther Party and its leadership. And so if you would, take us through a little bit of this argument of yours and what you've been calling stealth history.
Well, actually, it's a term that was coined by Eric Cummins back in the early 1990s. And he was pointing out how a number of publications were put out by the mass media, purportedly by former Black Panthers or individuals that had close relationships to the Black Panther Party leadership. And these individuals turned out to be, for the most part, police agents. One of them was a young Republican who went underground and wrote these books, you know, Spitting in the Wind. And these other publications, in which they just out and flat out lied about prominent leaders in the Black Liberation Movement in general, and particularly the Black Panther Party. And this history has been, this revision of events has been allowed to percolate and marinate because of the rise of a new Comprador class that we had after the 60s and early 70s. That new Comprador class, of course, is, as I indicated, mainly derived from former allies of Martin Luther King and the nonviolent integrationist movement. These individuals and organizations abandoned poor people in order to have a place at the table, at the corporate table, at the table of empire.
You've raised, I think, important critiques here. You know, you were critical of. You've long been critical of the Nation of Islam and its as you've called it, messianic approach to struggle here. You've been critical of Al Sharpton, the National Action Network, and of course the New Black Panther Party for its claiming the logo and name in many ways, but absent the analysis and the programs of the original Black Panther Party. My one question, I would like to get into some of the details of those arguments, but my one question to you initially is, what do you say to those who argue that public critique of other black leaders and organizations that are ostensibly trying to do some good is a flaw? It's a flawed approach and something that holds us back. How do you first address that critique that I know you've heard and that I've heard many times over the years?
Because we're making an assumption that the people that we're supporting and the people that we've failed to critique are actually advancing an agenda of black folks. We're making that assumption because of their pretense, because perception is reality. I mean, we look at organizations and they have these nice uniforms and they seem disciplined and they seem organized. But when you look on the reality, what do we have in terms of political empowerment? Do we have an independent black political party? Do we have an independent political party that represents all of the people who are maligned by empire in the United States? Whether they're immigrants, whether they're Latinos, whether they're gay and lesbian? Do we have this type of political organization given this type of leadership? No. What we have are organizations that parade around and show discipline and give fiery speeches that the right wing uses to organize and raise money with. And on the other hand, when we look here, when we look in the black community, we look at these organizations, they'll call like we had a Million Man March and we had a follow-up to the Million Man March. And the issue is not so much that you're calling black folks together. The issue is, what do you do when you do call them together? And also, how do they come together? When you look at and anyone that knows what I'm talking about, any activists in any of these cities know I'm telling the truth. You cannot have unity and don't have principles. When you have an organization, any organization, that wants to claim a national following, a significant influence on the masses, and then it goes into the communities and it calls together all the activists who are actually doing the work on the ground in the community and say, look, we need all to come together in Washington, D.C. on this date and demand A, B, C, and D. And then the organizations go out and they do all of this work. They mobilize the people. They raise funds. They go knocking on the doors to turn people out. These are the activists. These are organizations on the ground who are doing this. This is not the people that's calling for this congregation. They're not doing anything. So when you do wind up with a mass demonstration, they're the ones that's on the stand, they're the ones that's on the podium, and they have no program. They have nothing to offer. They have no strategic vision. They have no analysis. All they do is give you an emotional speech. All they do is rile you up and then tell you to go back to your place and continue to do what you've been doing before you came there. And then it's gone. It's done. It's a done deal. Okay? This happens time and time again. The National Action Network does the same thing in a different way. You remember the national rally that they called for justice, and they had demonstrations in over a dozen cities around the United States. But the major press conference that was defining everybody's demonstration was held in New York by Al Sharpton, who was sitting there with the families of the victims of police killings. And that's another thing. We have moved into an era where we are dealing with leadership by victimhood. The victims, who the families of the victims, mainly apolitical black folks, mainly poor people, mainly people who have never had any political agenda, didn't have any political analysis. They wind up with a child or a husband or a loved one murdered by the fascist police, and then they're thrust into the limelight. And we have a bunch of attorneys that run to defend them. Usually some of them are paid by people like Sharpton or whatever, and they come to defend them, and they haven't won a case yet.
You know, I heard you, Daruba. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I heard you make that point in your initial press conference with announcing the formation of the Coalition to Combat Police Terrorism with Brother Kalonji Tchanga and former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, among others. And you made this point in that press conference that you were not there looking to speak for the families of the victims of police violence because you were part of, if I understood you correctly or remember correctly, a political a vanguard or organized effort to respond to the conditions of the community, not necessarily to speak on behalf of the families. And this is, I believe, part of the point you were trying to make. Is that correct?
That's correct. Because we cannot allow a leadership by victimhood. It's tragic what happened to these families. But that's the reason why, in our own wake, according to our own analysis, everyone is responsible for what they know and for what they need to do based on that knowledge. So we come forth in order to demand accountability, in order to demand justice, in order to hold to account those black leaders who allowed these conditions to exist. You have to understand that the militarization of the police occurred while we have the current black leaders and so-called black militants on watch. It's occurred. Mass incarceration occurred on Sharpton's and all of these folks' watch, on the post-civil rights leaders' watch. It wasn't, and they called for the militarization of the police in order to fight drugs that was introduced in the community by the government. They called on the government to fight it, and our community has been ravaged by it ever since.
You know, Daruba, the President Obama just gave a major address the other day, or just last night, in fact, to the NAACP about mass incarceration. I'm wondering if you had a chance to see that and if you had any response to that, given what you've just said. And then also, and finally, I would want you just to say a word or two to all the activists coming into the struggle now, as I started off this segment with, and to those gathering, for instance, in Cleveland at the end of this month for the Black Lives Movement Conference, and to those who've joined the Black Lives Matter Conference. What might you say to all of that? So I'm asking you, if you could, to fold into a concluding comment your response to Obama's press conference or NAACP speech about mass incarceration, and then a word of advice to those entering the movement now.
Well, briefly, the only thing I can say, unless we develop a revolutionary analysis of our situation in the United States and begin to build sovereign thinking institutions in our community, we have the resources, we have the ability to do that. Unless we're able to do this, unless we're able to sweep away all of this miscellaneous stuff and come together and do that, then we are not going to succeed. And the major impediment to that are the types of behavior, the types of practice of people and organizations like we were just discussing. We have a bogus black bourgeois leadership, a bogus leadership of gatekeeping. We have storefront militants. We have messianic leaders who lead us around in circles. What we really need to do is understand concrete organization of masses of people around concrete issues. We are not going to legislate away white supremacy. We are not going to legally sanction the culture and the system of white supremacy. They could appoint all the prosecutors, special prosecutors they want. That's not going to change the mindset of white folks who believe in the system that they created for their privilege. And so the only way we're going to deal with that is we have to develop a revolutionary approach to these. We have to build a new abolitionist movement and not a reform movement. And one of the major problems with the Black Lives Matters is that the history, their history, where they're coming from, is totally disconnected from the legacy of black radicalism and revolutionary thought in this country. And with that disconnection, they are unable to come up with and understand strategies and analyses that will really empower us. But I urge them, of course, to stay in the streets. I urge them to keep putting pressure on the black comprador class and on the system, and exercise the only real political power that we have in this country, and that's as a social, political, and cultural monkey wrench, an economic monkey wrench. We need to bring things to a halt. If we can't drive safely in the streets without being murdered by police, then the police shouldn't be able to come to our community at all without the threat of death, without the threat of sanction. That's what it should be. Our community should be able to defend themselves and defend their integrity. And there's nothing wrong with that. Every human being has the right to self-defense, except black people. We only have the right to forgive. We only have the option to beg for mercy. This is a coward's mentality. This is surrender to white supremacy and the militarization of American society. We need to understand that this is a hard struggle, and we will be characterized as haters and terrorists or whatever, but the empire, whenever we throw a brick at white supremacy in America, we also throw a brick at American empire abroad and the support of imperialism around the world.
Well, Daruba Bin Wahad, thank you very much for joining us in this segment of I Mix What I Like here at the Real News Network. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for joining us here at The Real News Network. And for all involved, I'm Jared Ball. And as always, like Fred Hampton used to say to you, we say peace if you're willing to fight for it. So peace. Catch you in the whirlwind, everybody.
ಹೆಚ್ಚಿನ ಲೈಂಗಿಕ ಸಂಪರ್ಕದ ಸೋಂಕುಗಳು ವಾಸಿಯಾಗುತ್ತವೆ, ಆದರೆ ಏಡ್ಸ್ಗೆ ಚಿಕಿತ್ಸೆ ಇಲ್ಲ.
ಏಡ್ಸ್ಗೆ ತುತ್ತಾಗಿರುವ ವ್ಯಕ್ತಿಗಳಿಗೆ ನಿಮ್ಮಿಂದ ಬೇಕಾಗಿರುವುದು ಭೇದ ಭಾವ ಉಪೇಕ್ಷೆಯಲ್ಲ, ಅವರಿಗೆ ಅಗತ್ಯವಿರುವುದು ನಿಮ್ಮ ಪ್ರೀತಿ, ಅನುಕಂಪ ಮತ್ತು ಬೆಂಬಲ.
ಕಾಂಡಮ್ ಅಥವಾ ನಿರೋಧ ಬಳಕೆ ಲೈಂಗಿಕ ಸಂಗಾತಿಗಳ ಸಂಖ್ಯೆ ಹೆಚ್ಚಷ್ಟು ಎಚ್ಐವಿ ಸೋಂಕು ತಗುಲುವ ಅಪಾಯವೂ ಹೆಚ್ಚುತ್ತದೆ. ಒಂದು ಪಕ್ಷ ನಿಮಗೆ ಎಚ್ಐವಿ ಸೋಂಕು ಇದೆ ಎಂದು ಗೊತ್ತಾದರೆ ನಿಮ್ಮ ಆರೋಗ್ಯವನ್ನು ಕಾಪಾಡಿಕೊಂಡು ಹೋಗಲು ನಿಮಗೆ ಮತ್ತು ನಿಮ್ಮ ಕುಟುಂಬದವರಿಗೆ ಸ್ವಯಂ ಪ್ರೇರಿತ ಸಮಾಲೋಚನೆ ಮತ್ತು ಪರೀಕ್ಷಾ ಕೇಂದ್ರದವರು ಸಹಾಯ ಮಾಡುವರು.
ಚಿಕಿತ್ಸೆಗೊಳಗಾಗದ ಲೈಂಗಿಕ ರೋಗಗಳಾದ ಯೋನಿಯ ಸ್ರಾವ ಮತ್ತು ಗಾಯ, ಹುಣ್ಣು, ಕಿಬ್ಬೊಟ್ಟೆಯಲ್ಲಿ ನೋವು ಮತ್ತು ಸಂಭೋಗದ ಸಮಯದಲ್ಲಿ ನೋವುವಿರುವ ಸ್ತ್ರೀಯರಿಗೆ ಎಚ್ಐವಿ ಸೋಂಕು ತಗುಲುವ ಅಪಾಯ ಹೆಚ್ಚು.
ಏಡ್ಸ್ ಬಾರದಂತೆ ತಡೆಗಟ್ಟಲು ನೀವು ನಿಮ್ಮ ಸಂಗಾತಿ ಇಬ್ಬರಲ್ಲೂ ಪರಸ್ಪರ ವಿಶ್ವಾಸ, ಪ್ರೀತಿ, ನಿಷ್ಠೆ ಇರಲಿ. ನಿಮ್ಮದು ಏಕಪತಿ ಮತ್ತು ಏಕಪತ್ನಿತ್ವ ಸಂಬಂಧವಾಗಿರಲಿ.
Este es Radio Insurgente, voz del Ejército Zapatista de Liberación Nacional, transmitiendo desde las montañas del sureste mexicano.
This is Colonel Ann Wright. I resigned from the State Department in protest over the war in Iraq the day the war began. I had served in the State Department for 16 years and for 29 years in the U.S. Army and Army Reserves. The war in Iraq was a war of choice, not a necessity for our national defense. The Bush administration now bombs countries rather than speaking to them. We in the Congress were lied to, and we need an investigation of those lies. Please ask your Congress member to impeach George Bush and Dick Cheney for the lies they have told and the dangerous situation they have placed our country in.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Hello, listeners. I am Selma Abayash, and for Dear Sharif Fam. Today is Sunday, November 29th, 2009. On Thursday, November 26, I drove with some lovely people to Plymouth, Massachusetts, to mark the 40th National Day of Mourning and Fasting. Hearing the Native American speakers, my tears piled in my eyes. What I heard rung very deeply inside me, especially since all speakers talked in universal terms and universal struggles against war, occupation, and colonization. And almost every one of them, maybe all of them as I recall, mentioned Palestine. I felt I was with them, a part of them. I wished I were one of them, only to realize that I was. A letter from the Council of Maya Elders was read. A letter from political prisoner and Native American activist Leonard Peltier was also read. He referred to Plymouth Rock as the ground zero of Native American genocide. Indeed, it is. Others from the United American Indians of New England, UAIN, also spoke, including the following by Lakota sister and co-leader of UAIN, Mahtoan Monroe. Let's listen.
National Day of Mourning is a time when I think back over the past year. We left here on November 27th last year, following National Day of Mourning, and about a month later, the horror of the Zionist massacre of Palestinian civilians in Gaza commenced. Given that the attack on Gaza began in late December, I could not help but be reminded of the Wounded Knee massacre of 1890, when more than 300 disarmed Lakota people were mowed down by the Hotchkiss guns of the 7th Cavalry. Here is what the U.S. General E.D. Scott wrote in the official Wounded Knee Congressional Investigation Report. There is nothing to conceal or apologize for in the Wounded Knee battle, beyond the killing of a wounded buck by a hysterical recruit. The firing was begun by the Indians and continued until they stopped. That women and children were casualties was unfortunate but unavoidable, and most must have been killed by the Indian bullets. The Indians at Wounded Knee brought their own destruction as surely as any people ever did. Their attacks on the troops was as treacherous as any in the history of Indian warfare, and that they were under a strange religious hallucination is only an explanation, not an excuse. Doesn't this sound like the propaganda that we hear in the media every day about our Palestinian sisters and brothers? What happened in Gaza last winter was so much like the murdered Lakota children and mothers and elders who were thrown into mass graves at Wounded Knee, except that the Israeli cowboys have more advanced weapons, such as tungsten dime bombs and white phosphorus. Israel just bombed Gaza again a few days ago. The IDF continues to block the delivery of basic construction supplies so that the people of Gaza are unable to rebuild their destroyed homes and schools and medical centers. And the IDF continues to block needed medicines and most food aid. We must redouble our efforts to stop the many outrages committed on a daily basis against the Palestinian people. Being silent is not an option. And for any of you who might turn your back, if there's anyone here who might turn your back and say, why are you talking about this stuff? Why don't you just talk about Indians? Well, we are part of this world, and we have a right and an obligation to stand in solidarity with other people who are struggling, other people who are suffering. And besides, all you have to do is look at the history, and you will understand the Palestinians most certainly are Indian people.
That was, again, Lakota sister and co-leader of UN, Mahtoan Monroe. Thank you, Mahtoan. In A People's History of Thanksgiving by Ramzi Baroud. Ramzi Baroud is the author and editor of PalestineChronicle.com. He says, this week Americans will observe, or rather observed, quote, Thanksgiving, end quote, commemorating a romanticized era in their nation's record, celebrating the supposed solidarity and brotherhood enjoyed by the first settlers and the indigenous people of what is now called the United States. However, this fantastic tale of friendship contradicts the candid remarks of many notable personalities in U.S. history. Few can be as blunt regarding the legacy of the United States towards the native people of this land as the 26th President of the United States, Theodore Roosevelt. In his narrative, quote, "The Winning of the West," end quote, Roosevelt spoke about, quote, "the spread of the English-speaking peoples over the world's wasted spaces," end quote. He also wrote, "The European settlers moved into an inhabited waste. The land is really owned by no one. The settlers oust no one from the land. The truth is, the Indians never had any real title to the soil, end quote. In an interview with the British Sunday Times on June 15, 1969, former Israeli Prime Minister Golda Meir made similar claims, stating, and I quote, "There was no such thing as Palestinians. It was not as though there was a Palestinian people in Palestine considering itself as a Palestinian people, and we came and threw them out and took their country from them. They did not exist," end quote. While Native Americans and Palestinians were the ancient indigenous peoples of their lands, this was of little or no relevance to the foreign settlers. What really mattered was manifest destiny. What really mattered was Zionism. Amid this savagery, land grabbing, and dehumanization of the victims, both the United States and Israel have managed to convince themselves that the way they treated their victims was in fact humane and civilized. Quote, "No other conquering or colonizing nation has ever treated savage owners of the soil with such generosity as has the United States," end quote, Roosevelt said. I'm reminded here, as some of you most certainly are, with statements about the generous offers for peace that Israel had made towards the Palestinians, or with statements like this made by a high-ranking official colonizer in the British Army, Colonel Richard Kemp, and repeated incessantly by Israeli propaganda. And I quote, "I don't think there has ever been a time in the history of warfare when any army has made more efforts to reduce civilian casualties and deaths of innocent people than the IDF, Israel Defense Forces, is doing today in Gaza. Too bad for him, there's the Goldstone and numerous Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International reports," I say.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. For 30 years, Normal has been a voice for those Americans who oppose marijuana prohibition. It's time we stop arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Tän se toja kaikki on niin kumaa kante. Winston Watanini ja miksuachi Saskatchewan ei utsiaan.
I am Winston Watanini. I am from Saskatchewan.
Knowledge is power. We must gather knowledge to protect our children, our culture, our future. Learn the ways you can protect yourself and others from infection and spreading HIV. Teach others what you have learned. Together, we can make a difference.
Absolutely convinced that this nation is finally headed in the right direction. Our economy is growing again. We are adding jobs again. America's moving forward again.
President Obama wants $50 billion to create jobs for construction of roads, railways, and runways. Already, billions have been committed in new initiatives such as Social Innovation Fund, economic stimulus, and broadband. And hundreds of millions are going to border security. Yet, security and jobs for whom? Construction jobs mostly employ men. The new funding initiatives have principally benefited institutions and government. And border security seems to be for U.S. transnationals operating maquilas and those seeking to profit from the violence and poverty in Ciudad Juarez and Mexico. But what about security and jobs for women workers on the U.S.-Mexico border? Why invest in infrastructure benefiting transnational corporations and not in community-led development? For nearly two decades, first with NAFTA and now with the war on drugs, border women have seen their livelihoods, communities, and futures written off as unfortunate but necessary casualties by the companies they made rich, left to live and die amidst the underdevelopment of the border. Yet, women have refused to accept this fate. Organized, fierce, and resilient, they're pursuing their own version of security and employment. La Mujer Obrera in El Paso is one example. Through their daycare, restaurant, festival marketplace, museum, media center, and adult education programs, the women are creating genuine border security, real economic development. And they have extensive plans for additional development, including schools, housing, and health programs. Like La Mujer Obrera, there are other low-income women on the border who have the vision and drive needed to create spaces where cultural arts and grassroots microenterprises can flourish, restoring economy, pride, and dignity in their neighborhoods. Their efforts are the stuff that economists, feminists, and reformers tout as vital to build sustainable national security and development. Yet today, the women find themselves fighting their hardest battle yet, sustainability in the weakest U.S. economy in decades, and a future being designed without them. Local and national media have focused on border violence and security issues, but have missed the solutions that border women are ready to implement. Public-private initiatives need to prioritize border women's efforts to restore their communities from the damaging effects of international trade policies. As Gloria Steinem said when she visited La Mujer Obrera, there is no safe space for women. We have to create that space. We have to build that community. The conditions of women on the border are urgent, and women on the border are demanding justice and equity now. For more information, contact La Mujer Obrera.
I'm Dick Gregory with PETA. Martin Luther King Jr. taught me the fight against oppression is never an easy one. It's even harder if you have no voice. For animals held captive in circuses, life consists of cramped cages, shackles, and daily beatings. There is no escape. They cannot demand their freedom. Images like these bring only one word to my mind, slavery. Be an abolitionist for the animals. Please don't go to circuses. For more information, contact PETA.
757-622-PETA.
Nicely played. Sachin is off the mark.
घरेलू हिंसा में बाधा डालकर उसे रोको. बेल बजाओ. घरेलू हिंसा अधिनियम पर जानकारी के लिए bellbajao.org पर लॉग ऑन करें. ब्रेक थ्रू की पहल.
The top of the hour on the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn presents
It Sucks to Be Right
with comedian Tara Devlin from RepublicanDirtyTricks.com and comedian Sherry D. Sutton. In Switzerland.
Where we have no real microphone technology.
Right, so we apologize. And
please, do the best we can.
Support Progressive Voices, and maybe we'll one day be in a studio.
Maybe we'll get two brothers that will give us some money.
Right, really. I mean, this whole elections is so disgusting.
Oh,
you know what you know who I can't stand the most? Ted Cruz is the worst.
Oh, number one. Yeah, he's frightening.
Everything about him is so vile. Even his daughter. Did you see his daughter like, flicking at him? She hates him, too. But you know how children are. They can read people. I love that his roommate from college, who's actually a screenwriter now, who wrote The Hangover, says that his hatred for Ted Cruz isn't political. That if he agreed with Ted Cruz on 100% of his politics, he'd hate him about 1% less.
That's hilarious.
Google Ted Cruz's college roommate. It's really funny. His religiosity, he loves to torture, but he is so into Jesus. But he definitely has the racist, redneck, white trash vote
locked up, right?
Well, now, I need to clarify something for you, because you're kind of talking about my people, and you've lumped them into two things, and there's a difference between redneck and white trash.
Well, you have to explain, Sherry. Being from the South, you need to tell me these things.
I will, because, see, rednecks aren't necessarily racist bigots, but white trash people are. We can trace that all the way back to the Bible. You want to get some Christian white trash stories? The Bible's got, I'll give you one of them, all right? It's in Genesis, I believe, in like chapter 19. And this is right after Sodom and Gomorrah was burnt down, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Lot escaped with his two daughters, because his wife got turned into a pillar of salt. And they escaped Sodom and Gomorrah. They're living in a cave, and Lot's asleep. And the oldest daughter says to her younger sister, "Our father is old, and there's no man to lie with us as is custom all over the earth. Let's get our father drunk with wine, and then lie with him to preserve our family line through our father. Because I ain't screwing no foreigner. That's a sin."
Right. That would be disgusting.
That's white trash. That's white trash. See, people think that it was Harriet Beecher Stowe, the author, you know, of Uncle Tom's Cabin, that kind of clarified what white trash was for, because she said not only did slavery, like, produce degraded, miserable slaves, but it also produced poor whites who were even more degraded and miserable.
Mm.
And that both blacks and whites looked down on poor white trash. And I cannot imagine how degraded you'd have to be to feel worse off than a slave.
Really?
That's got to be something. I mean, because I watched the entire miniseries of Roots in the 1970s,
mm-hmm.
and I don't ever remember a moment when Kunta Kinte looked over at Miss Kizzy and was like, "Whoa, Miss Kizzy, life sure is hot. I got beat by massa today. Now we eating cornbread and chitlins for the seventh time this week. But thank the Lord, we ain't as bad off as them crackers down the road." See, I'll give it to you really quickly, okay? Because you know Jeff Foxworthy pretty much allowed us to get an understanding of what a redneck is. And that's
mm-hmm.
the first cousin of white trash, right? But they're not the same. And I know it's confusing for people like you Yankees when
yes.
you see us all gathered at a NASCAR race or a truck pool.
True.
Right? It's hard to tell the difference. We got the same trashy clothes. We got 1980s hairstyles. And we all have movable living quarters. I'm going to shed a little bit of light on you about the group commonly referred to as white trash with some little humor that I call hilarious and terrifying. I just like to call that hilarifying. Now, I'm going to do my own Foxworthy style humor for you just so you and the listeners can get a better understanding.
Okay.
Right? Redneck, if you've ever shot someone. White trash, if you've ever shot someone in your own family. Redneck, usually reads trashy tabloid magazines. White trash, can't. Redneck wears a Confederate flag because his great-great-grandpappy fought in the Civil War. White trash wears a Confederate flag because we hate black people.
Well, that clears it up.
That's my family. Those are the people. Like, see, my family are mostly rednecks that married into white trash. They think rednecks are uppity and snooty.
Well, that's like the Southern version of Modern Family, right?
And their mother-in-law gave her a bag of weed as a wedding gift.
And these are all true stories, too.
Now, see, here's the thing. Now, I did a show, right, called Taking Out the White Trash, but I got a theater critic who reviewed me. His name is Colin McLean, and he gave the review, and I ended up with this white supremacy group called Stormfront,
mm-hmm.
who got very angry about the fact that I had referred to myself as white trash, and they didn't like Colin for agreeing with me. Actually, I didn't like Colin for agreeing with me. That's totally different. And the thing is, Taryn, I guess I'll end it with this, is that these are the
yep.
people that are out there getting behind these candidates. This is why we've got to stay progressive. So listen, this has been Sherry D. Sutton and Tara Devlin for It Sucks to Be Right. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and keep listening for more on the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn.
We stick together, we win.
Hey everybody, it's Dr. Vibe, the host and producer of The Dr. Vibe Show at thedrvibeshow.com. At our show, we do conversations and provide information for black men and those who love them. So come check us out. Also at iTunes, and also selective episodes are featured at the Good Men Project, one of the most viewed websites in the world for men. So find out about black men and those who love them. at The Dr. Vibe Show.
This is DJ Fusion of the Fusebox Radio Broadcast and BlackRadiosBack.com, and you're now listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, another slice of real black radio for the masses. All right? Peace.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
It's our news back.
Thank you everyone for coming. Those at the very back, can you hear me clearly? Okay, great, because I tend to shout. Thanks to everyone for coming. When it comes to events on my campus in Montreal, I normally have to be dragged there in chains because we're always so busy that going to anything seems too much of a challenge. So I really appreciate the effort you made in coming in. I need to also especially thank the publisher, Robin Philpott, and Baraka Books.